Welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show that lifts the lid on New Zealand's distilling magic. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf, your guide to the flavours, the people and the inspiration behind our top local spirits. We'll hear what drives these distillers to create their signature blends and maybe discover a new favourite along the way. So whether you're a gin lover or a whiskey wizard, join us on the ride and always keep it classy and drink responsibly.
Kia ora and welcome back to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show where we uncover the stories behind New Zealand distilleries and the people bringing new spirits to life. I'm your host, Susie Carrig. Now, today we're exploring a spirit that is absolutely enormous globally, but still relatively new to many drinkers here in Aotearoa. Soju. Traditionally from Korea, soju is actually considered one of the most consumed spirits in the world, enjoyed everywhere from street food stalls to late night restaurants and family celebrations. It's known for being smooth, approachable, and very much about sharing with friends around food. My guests today have taken that century-old tradition and given it a distinctly Kiwi twist. They're the team behind Samyum, producing New Zealand-made soju distilled from Kumara and South Island water, with a range that includes classic and fruit-infused styles. Now, joining me today is Alex and Brian, the founders behind Samyum. Welcome, gentlemen, to Tales from the Top Shelf.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello.
Thank you for having us. This is exciting.
No, you're very welcome. I'm very excited to talk about Samyum. So let's start with the story behind you two. Before Samyum came along, how did you come together? What were you both doing? And were you already involved in the drinks world, or did this come from something completely different?
Well, Brian and I have known each other for many, many years. We went to the same high school. He was actually in my older brother's year, but they were good mates and we got to know each other. And then, Brian, you went on to hotel school.
Yes, correct. Went to Australia to do hotel management school.
Right.
Spent 2.5 years studying hotel management school, hotel management. Traveled the world in hotels, worked in London, Canada, south of France, a few other places around the world, and also obviously in Australia and New Zealand.
And while you're at hotel school, you were there with my brother yet again.
Yes, so yes, a lot of trouble going on over there.
I got to know Brian very well through my brother, and while they were off doing hotel management, I was working hospo, trying to pay my way through, of all things, art school. Yeah, way right. To make brown.
I see. Now, okay, so very different backgrounds. Now, every drink brand seems to start with a moment, a trip, a taste, an idea over a drink. What was it, the spark that led to Samyum?
Well, that's an interesting one. So, Brian... is, well, you might want to speak to who your wife is.
Yes, so my connection with Korea is directly related to my wife, who is Korean, from South Korea, in a little village outside Seoul, about an hour and a half out of Seoul, in a beautiful mountain area, pristine lakes, and a very beautiful environment. And that's how my connection began with Korea. Met my wife here in Auckland, and after, you know, a couple of years, traveled to Korea and met the family, and lived and worked on their family farm, which obviously led to where we are today, 14 years later.
And I went over to Brian's wedding, which was in Seoul, and beautiful wedding, and noticed that we fell in love with soju bars when we were there, actually. That was the first time I had contact with soju. Some really cool soju bars, and again, I was there with my brother, and we were staying in Gangnam, where all the Korean barbecue was, and they all had soju, and we discovered this drink going, this is amazing. I've never knew about it. And it was just one of those traditional things that we kind of fell in love with. And then when we got back to New Zealand, we kind of thought, well, because, I mean, traditionally soju was made from rice and grain. And then during the war, when they needed that for rationing, they started making it from what's called a goguma, which is a sweet potato in Korea. And it's similar to a kumara. And when we heard about that, we thought, why has no one made a soju from New Zealand kumara? So we set about making that idea a reality. That was a while ago.
So how long has the whole process taken you from the spark to launching?
Quite a while, actually. We probably, the first thing we did was partner up with a really good distiller that could help us achieve what we wanted to achieve and develop the product. But the initial idea to where we are today, probably 2 years, I would say.
Yeah, about two.
Okay, so soju is incredibly popular globally, with a lot of New Zealanders may still be discovering it for the first time. For those who haven't tried it yet, what exactly is soju and where's it come from historically? And yeah, how is it made?
It's soju is, well, it's a Korean drink. So it's primarily from Korea, and most of the big brands and most of our competitors to this day is still Korean and imported into New Zealand, Australia, and around the world. Some massive brand names. And it's primarily a clear spirit that is distilled. It's not distilled as much as a vodka, because vodka's goal is to be as pure and clean as possible. And soju's goal is to kind of have a bit of flavor. There are some traditions to it. There's a certain type of distilling apparatus they used to use, which some of the really traditional brands still use today, but most don't. And I guess the simple way to describe it is that it's probably like a very mild vodka, really. It drinks like a vodka, but it generally has more flavor. And as we've been distilling ours from kumara, the soju is probably a bit smoother than vodka.
Yeah, totally agree. Okay, Korea has a really strong drinking culture around soju, from the way that it's poured to the way that it's shared. Are there any traditions or rituals during the drinking of soju that you two particularly love?
Yeah, there's some great, I guess, protocols and ways you're supposed to enjoy it with friends and family. And one of the things that I find quite funny and enlightening at the beginning is you always must turn away if you're the youngest. So when you're drinking in a group and you don't know anyone's ages, it's a good way to find out if you actually are the youngest in the drinking group. So very much an honor thing, and you must look away and turn away when you're consuming your beverage. So,
and there's a few other smaller traditions too around, you know, holding the bottle with two hands.
Correct.
when you're pouring to an elder.
Yes.
But the main tradition that we've kind of really brought to our brand is the whole sharing aspect. Like most drinks you buy, it's to mix in a glass or open an RTD and one person is drinking it. Mm-hmm. With soju, it's got a really sharing culture and community culture where basically normally you'd buy a bottle, you'd have five shot glasses and you'd share that bottle around a table. And so we're really trying to bring this whole sharing culture along with the ride for Samyang.
Right, okay. So how does it, how do you determine? Do you all sit around and discuss who's the youngest?
I guess you pour the first drink and then work it out from there, but.
Yeah. I can just imagine everyone sitting around there.
Traditionally, you would know in a family environment, obviously, you know, grandparents and parents and siblings and so forth. But yeah, in a friend's environment, obviously a little bit. Can I see your ID or something like that? But no.
Yeah, definitely. Quite different. Yeah. Now, it might be a surprise to some listeners to learn that soju is actually one of the most consumed spirits in the world. Why do you think it's become so globally popular?
Well, yeah, it's massive. I mean, we were quite, when we had the idea and we started looking at how big the category was and how big some of these Korean brands are, I mean, you know, we were shocked to figure out that the biggest soju brand in the world, people may know it because it's in a few bottle stores, it's called Jinro. They also sponsored the Major League Baseball World Series. So they're a massive brand in America as well. But we were quite surprised to figure out that their annual turnover is bigger than Budweiser and Heineken globally combined. So it's absolutely massive. And I think the reason it's so popular is because it does fit for a lot of different occasions. It's a really nice, refreshing drink to have with spicy food, but it's also a great drink to share in a sort of low-key, casual bar setting, or even if you're at a party or out in a nightclub or whatever. It's a great drink for almost every occasion. The other reason, which we didn't really touch on before when we spoke about what is soju, most of the sojus that are mainstream that people know, they sit around 13-14%, so similar value to a wine in terms of alcohol, but they are very flavorsome. So most of them are fruit flavored and very Moorish, like they almost taste like an alcoholic fresh fruit juice, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite appealing because it's refreshing and sweet. There are, you know, we have an original flavor, which is the plain one, and a lot of brands do, and they are very popular throughout Korea. But in the Western world, most of the soju that's consumed is these very flavorful, fruity drinks, which are delicious. I mean, the reason we started making one is because we love drinking it. So.
Yeah, right. Fair enough. Right, over the last few years, we've seen a boom in Korean culture, from food to music to the film. Do you think the rise in Korean culture has helped bring more attention to drinks like soju as well?
I think definitely. The K culture is at an all-time high, and I think it's only going to get more popular. I mean, we just had the Oscars yesterday, and K-pop Demon Hunters won Best Song. So that was, you know, the culture is everywhere. I actually notice it a lot more. I'm a fan of the film Parasite, which won Best Picture, and there is a lot of soju drinking in that. And right. I'm a fan of Squid Games, the original season, and before they get into that crazy arena, there was a lot of soju drinking in that show as well. Yeah. And I think it's one of those curiosity gaps where people see it on these shows that have really taken over the world, and a lot of them will be thinking, what is that green bottle they're drinking? And so they start to look for it online. But I think the exposure through the Korean culture, particularly on the entertainment side, and even, you know, I mean, it's crossing over everywhere. So the other thing was the Rosé from Blackpink did a duet with Bruno Mars called, everyone will know that, Ah Pata Pata. And actually that Ah Pata is to do with drinking soju.
That's right. It's a traditional young drinking game, which they all do and enjoy. And it's all around soju. And there's so many Korean dramas on the internet now. And you watch Korean dramas, and it's all the soju culture is always there. There's always a green bottle soju in these productions, and you know, it's a very, I guess, easy way for people to learn the culture is to learn and to see Korean dramas on the internet. It's very popular.
Absolutely. And also, there's been the explosion in fried chicken around the country.
Yeah, we're fans of that too.
that's a very good point. You know, Korean food is globally becoming very popular, not just fried chicken, but, you know, different types of cuisine that they have and different styles of cooking.
And soju goes so well with those spicy chickens and even the mozzarella hot dogs on a stick.
Oh yes, that's another. And I mean, we've all got gochujang now in our fridges, which, you know, we certainly didn't have 5 years ago. Okay, so we've touched traditionally soju is made from rice and other grains, but around the world we're now seeing distillers experiment with other local ingredients. What was it that inspired the idea of using the kumara as a base for samyang?
Yeah, good question. The one thing about, so just to make a distinction, most of the branded sojus that the Western world knows, particularly America, are what we call green bottle sojus. Mm-hmm. And they're produced out of Korea and exported, but they're not, a lot of them aren't technically distilled. They're kind of mixed ethanol and they're mass produced. We wanted to make sure we were distilling something like the premium sojus of Korea. And I guess the trigger for that was that Brian's wife's family farm is a goguma farm. So we kind of got Brian had the idea when he was working on the farm while he was in Korea.
Yes, while digging up the hundreds upon thousands of, you know, goguma in the fields. It's very similar to our sweet potato, and they use for a number of ingredients in their food preparation, but also found out that yes, they make soju out of it, which was a sort of a eureka idea to think, well, could we do the same in New Zealand with our sweet potato?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Okay, so turning kumara into a smooth drinkable spirit sounds like quite the technical challenge. What was the development process like when you first started experimenting with recipes?
Well, it wasn't so much the recipes. We're not the first people to try and distill a kumara. The issue with kumara is that it's actually, because it's sweet, it's got, you know, inherent sugar properties, mm-hmm. and it burns at a very low temperature. So the recipes, getting a kumara into alcohol was the first challenge. And it took some innovative thinking and some working with the distiller to sort of, you know, we've got a few trade secrets on what our distiller looks like, because there's some modifications made to make that work, and a few other little tricks of the trade that we can't really say unless we you know, we'd have to kill you afterwards.
Yeah.
But you know, once we got the kumara distilled, then it was a case of looking at what all the other competitors are doing and going, how do we differentiate ourselves in the market? And so we started developing our three flavors, and they were three flavors that no other competitors were doing. So a lot of the other competitors will do a peach, which is very popular, or a green grape, or an apple, or things like that. Surprisingly, no one had yet done a raspberry that we were aware of.
Yeah.
So we started developing raspberry. And then we also, we teamed up with a distiller who is in the South Island, a very well-regarded, critically acclaimed gin maker called Jorg, yep. who runs Broken Heart Distillery.
Yes, we interviewed him a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and when we started making this, I was actually down filming there and around where Jorg was, and we ducked into Jorg because he was part of a TV show we were making, and I tried his quince gin. And I thought his quince gin was off the charts good. So we kind of went about developing a quince soju because no one had one of those. And then the final flavor is juicy pear and honey. The flavor profile is kind of a manuka honey. It's very, and that one's quite an interesting one because it smells very floral and pear on the nose. And when it first hits your tongue, you get all that pear flavor And then when you swallow it, it you get all that honey after flavor, which is it's almost like a two-in-one, that one. I love that one.
Very kiwi too, isn't it?
Very kiwi.
Yeah.
But you know, turning a kumara into alcohol is actually quite a challenge. It's a little bit easy if you're making a whiskey or a rum and you can have a bit of color and a bit of, you know, flavor, or you want a bit of that, you know, burnt end flavor in the spirit. But we were trying to make something very clean. So it did take a lot of testing and, you know, a bit of kiwi ingenuity actually to get it happening. But yeah, we got there and we're pretty proud that we managed to achieve it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I have to say, I've tried quite a few sojus over the years. And like you said, the way that they're produced, it creates a funny profile, I guess, on my taste buds. And I've always struggled to get my head around it. But when I tried your Sum Yum range, it was completely different experience. The flavors and smoothness is really next level, and it's quite dangerously delicious to drink, I must say.
Thank you. That's very nice to hear. And thank you.
Part of that is our pretty firm decision not to include certain ingredients that some of the other ones do. So there's certain preservatives and stabilizers we haven't included. Ours is very natural. And a lot of the other competitors have a very tart, almost sour note to them because they're using ascorbic and citric acid. And we're not using that because we wanted it to be more sweet and fruit rather than a lot of the other sojus get that freshness feel for the fruit flavor from just putting that sour note in. And I mean, they have a certain profile, and before we made ours, we liked it. we were drinking it.
But yeah, yours, it's like tasting a mass-produced spirit versus a grain-to-glass that's been made with love and attention. Now, soju is traditionally very much a social drink. As we've discussed, it's shared, poured for each other, and often enjoyed alongside food. How do you hope that people in New Zealand drink Sum Yum?
Yeah, good question. The thing about soju is that we're really trying to, so our focus at the moment for marketing, to give you an idea, is to, one, get Sips on Lips so people can taste how amazing it is, and two, to try and target on-premise some of the tastemaker locations where we can create an experience. So we're hoping for New Zealanders that they might go to a bar we supply it to, and the bar might, you know, help them understand what the experience of drinking Sum Yum and or soju is. And then hopefully we'll also, you know, get into bottle stores and off-prem and you know, hopefully nationwide. And we're hoping that that kind of carries through. There, it is a very popular drink amongst the youth because it tends to be quite affordable, and it is sweet and yummy, and it is quite a high alcohol content. And we're trying to make sure that people who buy Sum Yum really get this understanding of this is a drink to be shared. This is the type of drink that, particularly while it's new, you can bring to a party because the label looks really cool too. You can bring it to a party and people are going to be like, what is that? And you can like put five shot glasses out and pour it and share it and introduce more people. I mean, get on board early because you could be the cool kid that shows your friend something new.
Absolutely. It is very much like that. because what... To give people an idea, your 350ml range, what does that sort of retail at?
So our flavoured ones, which is we've got the euphoric raspberry, and we've got the quince and the juicy pear and honey, and we've also got a sugar-free raspberry. And the sugar-free raspberry is very subtle in flavour.
Yeah.
Those for... recommended retail is $12.95, but you will find them on special when we're on promo, it'll probably be $9.95 or it's $10.95, around the $10 mark. Then we've got what we call the Naked Smooth Original. And that is, it's a straight flavor profile without any other fruit or anything flavors in it, but it does have a very earthy sweetness coming through. And that one sits at 17%, and that'll be around $15.95 a bottle, because of the higher, obviously it's a higher percentage, higher excise tax. And then we also have something really unique. There's not many of these in the world. We've in the process of developing this, we developed a straight soju spirit. So we've released a 700 ml bottle of straight soju spirit, which sits at 40%. Mm-hmm. Drinks very clean, drinks like a vodka, but smoother, doesn't have that alcohol burn, but is the perfect base for, you know, new innovative cocktails.
Yeah.
So that's a very clean, neutral profile, but it does have some really lovely earthy notes and you know, coming through still, but it's much cleaner than the Naked Smooth has much stronger earthy notes and some of that inherent sweetness that we've left in because we haven't distilled it down as much.
Right.
And yeah, so around those price points, the big bottle, the spirit bottle, is going to be $74.95 when it hits shelves. And it's very new for us. That's not in the market yet, but it's right. Coming.
It's very coming. Soft. It's coming. That is definitely for the vodka drinkers out there. It is next level smoothness. Right.
Also, the other thing that, I don't know, listeners might like, we're not sure these days, but we entered the Naked Smooth Original, the 350 mils 17%, and we entered our soju spirit in the World Spirit Competition.
World Asia Spirit.
Yeah, the World Asia Spirit Competition that was held in Singapore.
Yeah.
And we got a bronze medal for both, which we were
pretty proud. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's the first medal.
Hopefully with many more to come.
We hope so, yeah.
Absolutely. Right, and finally, gentlemen, it's the end of the working week. You've clocked off. What's your go-to Sum Yum drink and how do you enjoy it?
Yeah, interesting. When we actually have these on our business cards. For me, I love, it sounds bizarre, but I love mixing the sugar-free raspberry, doing maybe a third of a glass, and then topping it up with a really nice flavorful tonic.
Ooh.
So maybe a rhubarb tonic or something a bit unique. But yeah, the raspberry undertone is very subtle, and with tonic it goes beautifully. But I also drink it with soda. But yeah.
Whereas I'm more traditional. I just like our Naked Smooth, 17%, icy cold.
Straight
in a shot glass. Just real pure, and it's just a lovely drink to have.
Nice and simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine's definitely the raspberry. That raspberry was next level. Right, Alex and Brian, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always exciting hearing from people who are bringing new ideas to New Zealand spirit scene. And I love the concept of taking a drink with centuries old tradition and reimagining it with local ingredients like kumara. Best of luck with the journey ahead with Sum Yum, and we'll definitely be watching to see where you go next. So thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today.
You're more than welcome. Thank you. And if people want to know any more about the product, they can just go to sumyum.co.nz and everything about the product is on there. And we'll be updating the list of where to buy it very shortly. So
fantastic. That's great. And as they said, if you'd like to learn more about Sum Yum and their New Zealand made soju, you can check them out at nzspiritguide.com and discover the range for yourself. You've been listening to Tales from the Top Shelf with me, Susie Carrick. Until next time, support local, buy direct, drink responsibly, and keep your top shelf full of stories.
That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more Behind the Bar stories.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.